It's Empty Wheel Friday on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Well, another Friday has arrived. We love Fridays for a number of reasons, not the least of which is we get to spend an hour with Marcy Wheeler, picking her brain about everything that's going on. And go figure, it was another busy week here in America.
Didn't we say this like five weeks ago? It's going to keep accelerating all the way till November.
Every week. Do you remember the days when there used to be something known as a slow news day? Remember, right? The month of August used to be slow. It isn't anymore. And I guess
sure, Sal isn't going to be this year.
No, not at all. So we just brace ourselves and go through it. We love Fridays. And then the weekend, I don't know about you, but I try to unplug and just get out of my head on weekends. And then we jump back in on Mondays. It's an ugly cycle, but I guess that's what we deal with. So Marcy Wheeler, how do you decide what you're going to write about with so much going on? I noticed that emptywheel.net right now doesn't have much about the trial that kicked off this week on Monday with jury selection. In fact, today, now Friday, they've seated the jury in the Trump election interference / hush money case. And now today they will start, or they'll finish up, hopefully, choosing the alternates, the alternate jurors, paving the way maybe for Monday opening arguments to begin. But you don't have any articles written or posted at emptywheel.net about it yet. It's just because nothing's really happened yet other than witness tampering?
Other than the witness tampering. I mean, there are millions and millions and millions of journalists covering it. And, you know, you can, Politico, Lisa Rubin, Just Security, those are people who are covering it well. You don't need me to cover it. I think that I wish that half of the attention on this trial had been shown to the Trump Organization fraud trial, because that Trump Organization fraud trial was every bit as important, every bit as complicit. It's the same kind of behavior. And I think it would be like this one. It's, I think, easy for Trumpsters to kind of ignore. But the Trump Organization fraud case, literally, it was proven that he thinks he's three times bigger than he is. And I think that that is a fundamental concept that MAGAs need to learn. There just wasn't anywhere near the same attention. And it seems inexcusable to me. If you're going to pay, I mean, a lot of outlets are paying stringers to cover this entire trial, but had nobody who ever showed up for the fraud trial. And the fraud trial, you know, it is Trump's own people being caught in big lies about what he's worth.
Right. Right.
Same thing. I mean, it's the same thing. Like, Trump everywhere is about a grift, about pretending to be somebody he's not, about pretending to be he's richer than he is, pretending to be he's more successful than he is, pretending to be he's, you know, that is Trump's MO. That is Trump's crime. Generally, but this one gets attention when the other ones don't. And I mean, let's be honest, like, even if he's found guilty, any sentence he gets is going to be minimal, just because of the kind of crime it is. It wouldn't be a crime, but it wouldn't be, you know, like the stolen documents case, if we ever get there, the January 6th case, if we ever get there, those are going to carry more substantial sentences than what we're looking at in New York. And I just, you know, I think, yeah, it is what it is. I think the fact that he's on trial is a good spectacle. The fact that he is a criminal defendant, meaning he has to be there every day, he keeps falling asleep in the courthouse. I think one of the most telling stories of the trial so far is he refuses to stand and honor the jury.
Oh,
and that is really unusual. I mean, I recommend people look for lawyers commenting on how unusual this is, because the entire point, the reason why in a courtroom you stand when the jury comes in, is because they're the judges. This entire thing is about jury of your peers, is about being judged by your peers, and Trump won't stand for them. Will not stand and honor them.
He shows nothing but contempt for the judge, for the jury, for frankly anybody who's not a Trump sycophant. If you're not with him, he believes you're the enemy, and he makes no secret about it.
And it's partly performance. I mean, yes, we're talking about the fact that he's not standing to honor the jury. That is performance for certain other people in the courtroom. It's going to become a sub theme. And, you know, his MAGAs are going to say, oh, you know, he's sticking it to him. Ultimately, he's not. Ultimately, he has to show up every day. Ultimately, he's, you know, I'm not saying he's miserable. I'm not saying he's melting down. I just think that he can't control his own time. And welcome to the world, Donald Trump. So I think there is at one level too big of a media frenzy about this. Yeah. But I think, you know, it is significant that he is a criminal defendant this time. I mean, another of the events before we get to the witness tampering, another of the events that was most important so far is that last week Trump said, oh, can't I just go to Supreme Court to hear my immunity hearing? Right. And Judge Merchant was like, no, you're a criminal defendant. You need to be here every day.
Right.
So that's actually like everything else that's gone on. He has a request, which hasn't been determined yet, whether or not he can take, I think it's May 17th off to go to Barron's high school graduation. Merchant, I don't believe, has ruled on that yet. But although Trump is out there lying about it, that's normal for a criminal defendant. Most criminal defendants don't have another criminal case pending for the Supreme Court making immunity claims. Right. But, you know, so those are some news points. You know, look, we're most of the way through jury selection as we record this. Hopefully Monday there will be opening statements. I think, you know, we know most of the story before. I think people aren't used to seeing how devastating loyal aides can be on testimony. Like, there's this big chatter about whether Hope Hicks is going to be all that useful. It's like, right. You know, in my experience covering trials of people like Donald Trump, the people who are always the best witnesses are the press people, because there's never any kind of privileges involved because they're the press person. But secondly, because they tend to take good notes, they tend to have, you know, they tend to be around when things are going down, and they tend to know exactly where the truth turns into false claims to the public. And so, yeah, I mean, Hope Hicks is going to be an interesting witness. She's not the central witness, but it'll be interesting. So we'll see.
It'll all be interesting. That's sort of an understatement. But we don't know, you know, we have a list of potential witnesses. But one thing that usually happens is the prosecution will supply a list of, say, the first few witnesses they're going to call. And this time, when they were asked for that, they pushed back and said, no, we're not going to, because he can't keep his mouth shut. He's outed the identity, basically, of jurors. We're going to get to that in a second. There's nothing to say he won't do it with witnesses. And the judge said, you're right. You do not have to announce which witnesses will be called. To avoid this kind of behavior.
Right. Yeah. Normally prosecutors, as a courtesy, will tell defense attorneys, here are the people you need to prepare for tomorrow and the next day, so that they can prepare at night, so that they're not scrambling while they're in the courtroom. And Bragg's people were just like, no, we're not going to do that. We already have two pending contempt requests against you for your violation of the gag. We're not going to give you more cause to violate the gag. So,
right. And there's more than two.
Lots of little subtext like this. Now we can talk about witness tampering, right?
Okay, yes, we can. So that's exactly what he's doing. Well, not witness tampering, but jury tampering. And I guess it.
Well, he's doing witness tampering as well. I mean, the reason the gag exists is because he's been beating up on Michael Cohen. Right. He's been beating up the other witnesses. You know, the gag is relatively recent. There's a lot of Trumpsters out there going, oh, you know, Michael Cohen has been beating up on Donald Trump for months. I'm like, yeah. And Donald Trump has been beating up on Michael Cohen for months. The gag is relatively recent. The gag is supposed to cover trial witnesses and Judge Merchant and his family and yada, yada, yada. So that, you know, Trump continues to push those limits. I suspect next week he's going to start getting fined for that. And those fines will continue probably to snowball as he continues to push the limits. But yeah, the what has happened, and it was Trump only secondarily. It's Jesse, what's his name?
From Jesse Fox Waters. News. Oh my God, this guy is
Jesse Waters. Horrific. And this is normal. I mean, you know, we saw this, for example, in the Roger Stone case, that this mob of right wingers see it as their duty to intimidate the jurors who are sitting in judgment of their friends. And in this case, so you've got a million journalists in the room, some of them very, very credible journalists, some of them not so much. And, you know, you got to tell a story because editors are out there saying, tell us a story, to give us the color, tell us, you know, tell us something that puts the reader into the courtroom. And so as a result, in varying degrees of detail, many outlets were providing identifying details of the jurors. And right. In one case, they described a nurse, the kind of nursing she does, the hospital she works for. And within, you know, overnight, her family and friends all contacted her and said, oh, you're that juror.
Right.
And she realized that as this progresses, everyone is going to be watching the news about the trial. And so the jurors, we lost two jurors.
Right.
Got a bunch of jurors the first day, come in the next day. This woman's like, you know, I thought I could be fair, but knowing that everyone knows I'm going to be on this jury, I can't be fair. There's going to be too much pressure of people talking to me about it. And, so you've got these jurors, and boy, I feel for them. Like, me, they too. Are sitting here going, you know, wake up one day, I'm going to go do my civil duty. Get there, discover that you've got a, you know, questionnaire that's pages and pages long to figure out what you really think of Donald Trump. Oh, this is really, you know, this is really momentous. Sit down, get voir dire, get questioned about, you know, what your social media looks like, get questioned about what you really think about Donald Trump. That's all fine. And then you go home and all of a sudden your world comes back to you and says, oh, you're going to be a Donald Trump juror. Isn't that interesting? And, I cannot imagine the pressure that these people are under. And so, you know, so in the last 2 days, journalists, I think some but not all, are trying to do a better job of hiding, especially the employment information of people. But, you know, these people are going to be identified within weeks. And then and there's going to be this pressure we have to start talking about it systematically, I think, you know, because we, you know, I did a podcast, Liz Dye's show, for those who have access to it, that's out today, about Hunter Biden. And it was like, everyone knows that Jack Smith is being threatened. Everybody yeah. knows that Tanya Chutkan has been threatened. Everyone knows the Judge Merchant. Everyone knows the Judge Engoron. Well, so are the Hunter Biden people, but that hasn't gotten the same level of press. And so you've got, you know, everyone there was being stalked in the same way that these jurors are going to be stalked, in the same way that Judge Chutkan is going to be, has been stalked, in the same way that Jack Smith's wife got stalked. But this goes back. I mean, what do you think the lives of Peter Strzok and Lisa Page were like?
They're destroyed.
The entire point was mob violence. What Mike Gallagher, one of the Republicans who is retiring as soon as the security is, you know, he's going to stay through the Ukraine vote and then quit. He's a Wisconsin Republican.
Right.
And that, you know, he quit. There was some discussion about it. And then in recent days, there's more subtext about the threats, like not just him, but his young family is getting, because he's not towing the line of Donald Trump. We heard this with Don Bacon. We heard this from, you know, when there is nobody who is on the wrong side of Donald Trump, who is not stalked, who does not face mob violence. And it is... it is systematic. It is, you know, there's a group of these people. Jesse Waters, we talked about. Jack Posobiec is always involved. Mike Chernovich always involved. These people in kind of Roger Stone's world that, you know, they have the ability to go find these people. They have the ability to stoke violence. They have the ability to terrify people. And it has been going on for years. Mm-hmm. We have not... As a society, you know, it was like, it's okay if it's just Lisa Page and Peter Strzok. Well, it's okay if it's Michael Cohen. It's okay if it's Marie Yovanovitch. It's okay if it's the whistleblower and we haven't had a conversation of how normalized political violence is for anybody who comes up against Donald Trump. And now it's the moment where we have to figure out how to get this guy through trial. And it is a very difficult issue, because you really do need to have press coverage of this. You need, I mean, partly because people want to hear about it, but partly because you need to have that kind of transparency. So independents, for example, can really get a sense of this being a real trial. It's not the political witch hunt. They can, you know, they can, and honestly, there are times when it is important to have the press very involved, because there are things that go haywire. You know, there were a couple of cases in the January 6th cases, but not the Trump January 6th cases, but the mob scene January 6th cases, where something went haywire, and it was important to have journalists scrutinizing that and calling out prosecutors for those screw ups. So you need to have the press involvement. The limitations that Merchant has asked for are really pushing up against prior restraint. And yeah, there will be journalists who do not abide by them. And there will be people in the courtroom who do not abide by them. And we need to be prepared for what happens when these people who are doing their civic duty start getting stalked or start getting pressure to vote, you know, to acquit him.
Right. And so you mentioned Jesse Waters, who's on Fox primetime. And I guess I don't watch it, but the first day when they started picking the jurors, he went through each of the jurors who had been seated and basically said everything they know about them, even though the judge says don't do that. That's all he wants to do is disqualify them. So the woman who you mentioned, the nurse, he talked about, you know, her. She gets her news from the New York Times and Google and CNN, and he scoffed at that and said, and then she said that she doesn't have a definitive opinion of Trump, but she does believe no one is above the law. What is offensive? And he went, so I question juror number four. Well, who the hell are you, number one? And this is, you should not be doing this. And then she goes home and her phone blows up with friends and neighbors and saying, is that you? You're on the jury. And she didn't come out and say they're Trumpers and they were threatening her, but that's the implication. That's what I heard. And the judge dismissed her. So through intimidation, although he had already been warned by this judge, you do not intimidate those jurors, he's intimidating the jurors. So when is enough enough? When do they say there are going to be consequences here? Because in any other trial, any other defendant who displayed behavior like this would be held accountable.
Right. But here's the problem. Like Roger Stone was gagged pretty heavily gagged, right? For this reason, especially because he threatened the judge and the judge said, you're not going to talk about this case publicly. And that did not prevent the Jack Posobiecs of the world from doing exactly what Jesse Waters has done. And so this is the issue. Like there, to some degree, it will have to be public, the names of these jurors.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, these people are going to be stalked. They are going to be stalked. And so we need to prepare. It's going to start next week. Just as you were talking, Tanya Chutkan, the woman who was in prison for threatening Tanya Chutkan, that woman wasn't actually following Truth Social. There's a bunch of people who take action who you can tie it directly to Truth Social, something Donald Trump said. That woman was ginned up by Fox News. Her dad described, she sits there on the couch, drinks too much, and gets pissed off by Fox News. So it was Fox News that riled her up. It wasn't Donald Trump per se. And, you know, Fox News, that's what Fox News does. I mean,
So you have Fox News, who just months ago was ordered to pay just about $1 billion to the Dominion voting systems, for defamation, because they lied about this company and said that they were, you know, flipping votes and everything that had no impact on how they're covering things, because they're still making shit up.
They're still making shit up, and they're still stoking violence, and they're still, that's absolutely right. One thing that Judge Merchant could do is he could warn Murdoch and say, because so much of the witness intimidation is coming from your properties, we will strip the credentials of journalists from your properties, starting with Fox News, unless that slows down. I mean, the goal of this is not to intimidate jurors. And that might actually be proper. I don't know what the credentialing system is for the courthouse, but I would imagine that there is, I mean, like when I covered the Scooter Libby trial, when I wanted to cover the Roger Stone trial. I mean, one of the points of having credentialing is you can control if somebody goes haywire. During the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers trials, they did use the credentialing system to make sure that stuff wasn't getting sent out from the media room. So there is an ability to use the credentialing system to limit some of that. So that's something that Judge Merchant might consider.
Well, he should, because look, these jurors, you said it's inevitable that their identities will come out. Well, it shouldn't be. They are supposed to be anonymous, and maybe they need to be sequestered and they need to be behind a screen or something. I don't know what's legal in this case, but putting these people and their families in danger doesn't seem to be the right way to go.
Right. Yeah, no, yes. And I don't know what the answer is. I know that we are not talking enough about the systematicity of Donald Trump's tampering, of his threatening. I mean, you know, I sort of was hopeful after the Jim Jordan pitch for speaker, when people like Don Bacon's wife were getting threatened. I'm like, okay, Republicans, can we take a step back? Now that you've experienced, can we take a step back and talk about how dangerous it is that anytime anyone goes haywire of Donald Trump, this happens to them, because now you've experienced it. Your wife is the one with the gun under her pillow. But, you know, so many people have experienced this before, and we've sort of just written it off.
Yeah.
We sort of, you know, one by one, we're like, we care about the prosecutors and the judges in some trials, but not others. But we're not talking about it as a whole.
No, we're not. And I got to tell you, just an aside, this is how freaked out people are. I happened to be on the Book of Face, and I saw a guy who I've known, you know, for 35 years, not well, but a friendly acquaintance, who posted something, just dismissed. And I'm reading the comments, and it's apparent to me, okay, he was called to jury duty, went through the process, and it was let go. And I asked him, I said, come on the show with me, let's talk about the experience. He said, I would love to, thank you for asking me. However, when he was questioned, they asked where he worked and a few other very sort of, you would think, basic questions. And he got a bunch of phone calls. He's like, people know it was me. I'm not talking about it. There are crazy people out there, and I'm not speaking publicly about it. He wasn't even picked. He wasn't even like one of the people who was picked and then dismissed. He was dismissed, and he still is afraid to talk about it just because of that he was identifiable based on the little bit of information that was there, given in a courtroom that was closed, that was not televised. Now, you know, we know this trial will not be televised. And you, I think you make the case why it shouldn't be.
I always do. Yeah. Look, the media is supposed to always want publicity and everything. But first of all, I think a lot of very normal media outlets were not being very responsible about these details. They're just like, I want to tell a story. It's my job. I want to tell a story. And it's like, but if you are putting people at risk, if you are putting people's lives at risk, then you are not making news anymore. You're part of the problem. I just am so tuned into the degree to which everyone involved in any of these things ever has been stalked that I just, we cannot ask people doing their civic duty to face that. We can't.
Right. And the thing is, they were given the opportunity. Unlike, I've been called to jury duty a few times. I was an alternate once. By the way, in many of these trials, it's hard to stay awake. So poor Donald can't seem to keep his eyes open. But in this case, I know the last time I was called, I had to tell the judge, look, I've got too much going on in my life. There's no way I can stay focused on this. I'm worried. And he finally let me out. They were given, these jurors, these potential jurors, were all asked, first of all, do you believe you can be objective here? even if you have a, you know, a definitive opinion of the defendant, whatever, if you feel like you cannot put those biases aside and be objective, let me know. And at any given time, half the people raised their hands and they were just dismissed. So, yeah. You know, he was trying to make it fair. Now, in some of the coverage I was reading yesterday, it appears that that some people were fudging the information because they wanted to get on the jury for whatever ulterior motives they have. But for the most part, I you know, you got to hand it to these people for wanting to do their civic duty and to try to remain objective, to hear the evidence and decide the case based on that. But, you know, with all the noise and with Trump glaring at some of these jurors and his just modes of intimidation, and the judge keeps on warning them, this is going to keep going on. It scares me that as it goes on, they're going to go through these alternates because they're going to keep trying to get anybody who they believe won't be sympathetic to Trump off the jury.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that I think people don't appreciate is how hard, even with someone like Tyler Toronto. Tyler Toronto is a Jan 6er. I've talked about him, I know, in some past shows. He was sort of a low level Jan 6er. They weren't arresting him anytime soon. He has service related PTSD, former military, and about a year ago or so, he drove to D.C. and started engaging in the whole martyrdom complex outside the D.C. jail. And it got so bad, he was such a disturbed person that even those nut jobs outside the D.C. jail said, please don't come back. And one day, Donald Trump posted Barack Obama's Kalorama address, right, on Truth Social. And that dude started stalking Barack Obama in Kalorama. And he was arrested for that stalking. He was arrested because he had a van with explosives in it, and he was hunting down a Secret Service protected former president. And it feels like you should be able to hold Trump accountable for that. But all Trump did, and Trump is very, 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 very skilled at like toeing the line. He's like a little child, a toddler who knows exactly how much he can get away with, yeah, and how to be most effective when he is doing that. And so in this case, in the Tyler Toronto case, all he did was post, you know, somewhat public information. He didn't say, go stalk Barack Obama. It is just the fact, and he knows this, that his followers are going to respond to that. And then people like Jack Posobiec, you know, they're going to ratchet it up. They're going to say, they are going to say, we need to defend our guy. We need to hunt out the everyone. I mean, like you said, like this notion that just because somebody watches CNN, they're not going to be fair to Donald Trump. That's absurd. But this is the rhetoric that Fox News and these far right chat rooms use. And so it is a lot easier to incite people that way. But the problem is proving that line of throughput, right? Proving that is very difficult. And so holding Trump accountable for the way that he's intimidating these people, or the, you know, or his handlers, or Jesse Waters, or whomever, it's very, very, very hard to do. And so, you know, it's a very difficult situation.
It is.
And, you know, I can't, like, I can say, we can talk about the problem with Murdoch outlets and impose a cost on Murdoch. I think that is something that probably is within Merchants or the courthouses doing. But we really have to find a way to shame people for this kind of witness intimidation, because it's going on everywhere. And it is one of the most toxic things in our politics right now. And we just haven't had that conversation as a society.
No, and granted, I didn't watch all the coverage of it, but what I did see on TV, they don't seem to have made the connection between this juror number four getting out, telling the judge, I thought I could do it, but because all these people contacted me, I'm afraid that one, my identity is going to be released, and two, there's going to be too much pressure on me not to do the right thing and I don't feel like I can do it. That was jury tampering. And the fact that it was just, okay, so there were seven jurors seated and now we're down to five. It was almost like a given without any, or with very few media outlets, I should say, noting the severity of it, that this is really dangerous territory.
Yeah. And this is before, you know, it's going to be a long trial and these jurors are going to have a life, right? So they're going to go home at the end of the day. They're going to go out to a bar and somebody's going to sidle up to them at a bar and just get friendly with them. And, you know, then take them out into an alley and say, you got to blow the case or something. I mean, I'm not saying it does happen. It really does happen. And it's very hard to track down when that happened. So, right.
I did hear something about marshals escorting the members of the jury to and from the courthouse. But they're not going to be with them 24/7. Right. I mean,
well, not so far.
Not so
who
far.
Knows what's going to happen.
I think they're going to wind up being sequestered. They're going to have to, but then they also need protective details on their families.
Yeah.
I appreciate the people who are have volunteered basically to be jurors because I wouldn't take that on.
Yeah, incidentally, I was called for jury duty here in Ireland about 2 months ago, and it was far more like, you know, it's Ireland's small country. It's like, hey, here's the defendant. And Ireland, of course, you can't name a defendant until they're found guilty generally. And so they're very strict rules about, like, Ireland's home to one of the biggest organized crime gangs in the world. And no one in Ireland could talk about the organized crime gang, even though everyone knew about it, until U.S. Treasury sanctioned them. Wow. These people who are living in Dubai, they're out, you know, hiding out in Dubai. And then in Ireland, you could point to the U.S. sanctioning of these people who are Irish organized crime, but you couldn't actually talk about them directly. I mean, there's this whole system in Ireland. But in any case, so I'm in jury duty and I'm like, and I'm trying to get on because I'm like, you know, in the United States, no one would let me on a jury because this is what I do all day. And it's going to be very, I came very close to getting on a jury when I lived in Michigan. And then I said something and the prosecutor, like there was a break, prosecutor comes back and she's like, you out of here. You know? And it was like, I said the right thing. She was like, I think that defendant had a record, and somebody asked, "What do you, you know, how would you respond if a defendant had a prior record?" I'm like, "I would do whatever the judge tells me to do. My job is to listen to what the judge, which is the right answer." Yes. But something about that answer really triggered the prosecutor, so she must have gone and looked me up over the break, and then she came back. And she's like, "Holy shit! How did you stay on my jury so long?" So I'm never going to be in a U.S. jury, but so here I am in Ireland. I'm going to get on the jury. So I'm telling family members this, that I got, you know, I just didn't get the number called. And I wouldn't, of course, know it because I know very few people in Ireland relatively. Mm-hmm. So the family members are kind of, they go a little bit gray. They're like, no, people don't want to be on a jury here. And it took them a while to explain it to me. It's because so much, you know, there's less crime here. There's less kind of garden variety crime here. They're like, there's so much witness tampering here that no one wants to be on a jury because, you know, if it's organized crimes or certain other groups, you are always going to be tampered with. And people are just terrified of that. So apparently it's common here. I didn't know better. I'm like, they're not going to tamper with me. I mean,
you never know.
People from the United States. Yeah, finally, right. Some organized crime group in Ireland is going to finally get me, not Donald Trump.
Right.
How hilarious.
Well, let's hope not. Marcy Wheeler is with us. Okay, so next week when we talk, we'll have had some testimony, and there are a number of people, and you've recounted them, doing a great job of live tweeting or tooting or shitting or whatever on the interwebs, because that's what we've got. We don't even have audio of the trial, as far as I know, right? We get the reports from people who are in the courtroom, and there are some great people covering it, Adam Classfield among them, Anna Bauer, a number of them who you've mentioned.
Yeah, Lawfare has another guy who's doing a lot of live tweeting, and he's good. You know, again, he's got a law background. I've recommended Lisa Rubin.
She's doing good. Yeah.
Yeah, she's doing quite well. So there is a lot of good coverage out there. So it's going to be there. You can follow it almost in real time. That's not where we're that's not where we're missing. I think we almost have too much attention to it. We also next week we had a Supreme Court case that is quite important this week.
Yeah. So this was a challenge by one of the January 6th defendants, I believe someone who was convicted, saying that this obstruction charge should not be. Is that too oversimplifying it, or is that what the case was?
Okay, so 300 January 6ers were charged with obstruction, 18 U.S.C. 1512 C2. It is a crime that can be punished with up to 20 years, which is something that the Republicans, that the conservatives on the court were really impressed with. It doesn't work out that way. The Solicitor General was sort of like, no, the median that these people are getting is 25 months, you know, so it isn't 20 years. It has been 20 years for people with a lot of enhancements, like the Oath Keepers, right? So they used violence, they used extensive planning, they specifically went after cops, blah, blah, blah. But the idea of it is, if you have an official proceeding, if you obstruct it, with criminal intent, with corrupt purpose, then you can be found guilty of this. And honestly, from it is not a bad faith challenge. From the start, people are like, what distinguishes these people from what Medea Benjamin does on a weekly basis? What distinguishes these people from, and this one is a really important one, although it didn't come up explicitly in the hearing, which I thought was interesting, what distinguishes these people from the Kavanaugh protesters?
Okay.
Or what distinguishes these people from the Portland rioters? Now, there are things that distinguish them. The Portland rioters were not interrupting a proceeding. They were just, you know, vandalizing on a nightly basis. And much of what they were vandalizing actually wasn't federal property. Much of the activity, and this is one of the problems with the prosecutions of those people, because trust me, DOJ tried, is that many of them were not anywhere near federal property, in which case DOJ no longer had jurisdiction. And so they, you know, the marshals or Bill Barr's goons arrested many of them blocks and blocks and blocks away from the federal courthouse. And then all of a sudden you've got a jurisdictional problem. And so that's one of the things that has happened with a lot of those cases. Another thing that's happened with a lot of the Portland cases is you just don't have the quality of evidence because it was night, they weren't filming themselves, they had masks. Republicans always ask that question, and that is the explanation for Portland. It has been reviewed on a couple of these criminal cases.
Okay.
The difference between the Kavanaugh protesters is, one, either they were not, there were two groups. There was one group that was arrested as they kind of marched up the steps of the Supreme Court. That was one crime, and many of them were charged with trespassing. But they were nowhere near the actual hearing. They did not, they were occupying space, but they were not interrupting the hearing.
Right.
There were people who stood up during the hearing and briefly, 30 seconds, interrupted the hearing as they were arrested and removed. One of the things that the Solicitor General said about the, you know, interrupting the actual hearing is they're like, well, you know, this is just 30 seconds. It's not, you shut down the whole thing and make people go hide. This is a difference in degree, which is one thing. But the other thing is everyone in Kavanaugh's hearing was there legally. And so one of the things they've used to get to corrupt purpose on the people charged with this is otherwise illegal activity. So if you are trespassing to do the interruption, then you're automatically breaking another law. Okay. This challenge is sort of three parts. And it's really, I listened to virtually all of it. And people I trust come down on all sides of it. I think it is likely that the court is going to restrain the use of this in some sense. But the first question is, because this was passed in the wake of Enron, there is a belief on behalf of some people that there needs to be a documentary aspect to this. In other words, like, you need to have tried to destroy, you need to have shredded evidence, right? Mm-hmm. And so because none of the Jan Sixers shredded evidence, then this shouldn't be used with them. So one of the questions the Supreme Court is dealing with is, does there have to be a documentary side to it? Now, Solicitor General and all along, people are like, there is a documentary side to it. The entire point of this proceeding is getting the certificates to Mike Pence. He opens them. We then deal with these certificates. One of the reasons why whatever the Supreme Court does is less likely to apply to Donald Trump is because there's a closer nexus between his fake certificates. Right. He did tamper with evidence. He created false certificates. So one is, does it have to be documentary? The second one is, does the vote certification even count as an official proceeding? And some members of Congress some members of the court are sort of like, well, I don't think this should be. And that is an appalling notion. Yes, that you could protect a trial, but you couldn't protect. I mean, the Joseph Fisher, the defendant in question, literally beforehand was saying they can't vote if they can't breathe. In other words, we are going to prevent the vote certification by ensuring these people can't breathe. Members of Congress can't breathe. And so, and meanwhile, the Supreme Court, of course, Congress is doing everything they can to give the Supreme Court more protection as there are threats against them. But the Supreme Court is about to say, people can want to assassinate Mike Pence. People can talk about suffocating members of Congress, but that doesn't count as obstruction. And then the court wasn't as focused on this, but it could come up, because one of the distinctions between Medea Benjamin and these people who want to suffocate members of Congress is the corrupt purpose, is to what degree do you have guilty intent as you're doing it? One of the reasons why it's really hard to read the court is because there's a whole spectrum of what they might do. Justice Roberts, for example, is definitely in there. There has to be a documentary side to it. But even if there's a documentary side, then can prosecutors come back and say, well, there is a documentary side. I mean, they've been arguing this from the start, right? The documentary side is that there are these certificates. And if you disrupted the process of delivering, opening, and deciding on the certificates intentionally, then maybe you can be found guilty anyway. And some of the defendants, it's going to be easier to, I mean, some of those defendants actually know that there was a certification process. Others just know that, if Mike Pence saves us, then Donald Trump can remain president. So that it's a huge decision. Probably the court is going to suck, and that's going to really roil the. I mean, we've known this from the start. I've been talking about it since July 2021. Yeah, right. A couple of other journalists were talking about it even before me. But those of us who cover this have been talking about it all along. We have long said we don't know whether this 1512 is going to hold up. It's more likely to hold up for Donald Trump than it is for Joseph Fisher, but we don't know. And if it doesn't, DOJ superseded these three percenters just yesterday. Very interesting conspiracy indictment, but it's the same obstruction charge. And so that's one of the most disturbing things is for some of the militia conspiracies, it is still the fundamental charge at the core of these conspiracies. And if that goes away, then a bunch of pretty dangerous militia guys may get out of jail. And so,
oh my goodness. And that, again, the Supreme Court will hand down their opinions, their decisions, the end of June, which is when they typically do it. Now, this coming week, what you started to say is on Thursday, the last day the Supremes will hear a case in this term, their final case, is Trump's claim that he's got something called absolute immunity that does not exist. Many of us feel they should have heard this immediately and ruled on it quickly, and showing that they can just look at Bush v. Gore 2000. They did it fast. They saw no such sense of urgency here, I guess. But the day is finally coming. Donald Trump asked to be able to go to the Supreme Court that day. The judge said, no, we're dark on Wednesdays. That's a Thursday. You will be here as you're required to be. But so much rests on this. I mean, if they show their partisan stripes and side with Trump and inconceivably say, yes, a former president has absolute immunity, then we're all fucked, aren't we?
Well, I highly doubt they're going to do that.
I doubt it too.
Even this court, I really doubt they're going to do that. I think another thing that happened this week is that while the criminal case has been on hold, the civil suits, there was this opinion last year called Blassingame,
yes,
which was of civil cases. Can Donald Trump be sued by everyone who were victimized by January 6th? And what the D.C. Circuit decided was, if something was done to get reelected, then it is not an official act. And then that can be something that you can include in a lawsuit. But if it was something that presidents normally do, then it's an official act and then you can't include in the lawsuit. So there's this, so it got sent back to the district court, and the district, the plaintiffs are now pushing to get discovery on that dividing line. So they're pushing to get discovery so that they can make the argument, that they can make the case, this is all unofficial conduct that they can sue Donald Trump for. And he tried to get that stayed because of his criminal case. And just yesterday, the judge in that case said, nope, no, not going to happen, because you're really just doing the is it an official act thing. It's going to be an interesting debate about his Twitter account, whether that's official or not. But so that's moving forward. And that's, you know, like, I don't know whether that case will go to trial before Donald Trump. It's not going to go before the election, but it is moving forward. So that's sort of interesting. It is a real question. I think it is fair for the Supreme Court to say that the D.C. Circuit didn't do a good enough job of, and this is where Trump's lawyers were remarkably effective for them, because usually their point is not to be effective, it's to be blustery. After the ruling from D.C. Circuit came out, they're like, how does this prevent Barack Obama from being charged for the drone killing of Anwar al-Awlaki?
Right.
And it's a good point. I mean, we let presidents do things in their role as president that no private citizen could do. So how, now there's an easy answer to why Barack Obama wouldn't be charged for drone murdering Anwar al-Awlaki, and it's because he had white papers. He basically had okay from OLC before he did it. Trump, if he becomes president again, will just get okay from OLC on everything he does so that it can all count as official conduct. I think the most likely worst outcome of this, I mean, the most likely worst outcome is that Supreme Court doesn't decide till next term, which is a real possibility.
My
belief is that they're going to try and decide. So they'll decide in June sometime. And then the trial could start in September. So one of the worst outcomes is that they would delay again. Another worst outcome is that they would remand it for determination of what was official and what was not official, and allow it to be appealed again, which would then have the same effect. A trial would not go forward until the election. Those are, to my mind, the worst possible outcomes. I think that they're going to come, but I think one of the subtexts that I'm the only one who's talking about, and it could be wrong, is I think Jack Smith has other conduct he's looking at that he would charge if he knew that he could charge something that was official conduct. So just as an example, Mueller tried to treat the pardon dangles Trump did as obstruction. And it's something Bill Barr actually said could be obstruction.
Sure.
And then he ignored all of that when he wrote his Mueller report memo. Trump did do corrupt pardons. Trump did pay off Roger Stone, Paul Manafort's back in the campaign, big news. And Steve Bannon, he did pay off people who did crimes for him by giving them pardons.
That's right.
And do I know that Jack Smith is looking at some of these? No, but I wouldn't be surprised at all for a variety of reasons. And, the question is, could you charge Donald Trump for dangling pardons? Could you charge Donald Trump for promising people pardons if they engaged in criminal activity for him? And I think those are the kinds of things that a Supreme Court decision might affect.
Well, now you got Bill Barr. You mentioned Bill Barr. He has come under criticism for being a hypocrite, but we knew that. He did Trump's dirty work. And then once he left his position as attorney general, he became very critical of the things Trump did. And now he says, of course, I'm going to endorse him. You said that's not really news. We knew that. Was there ever any question he was going to do this? But, you know, in the words of Joe Biden.
Come on, man.
Really? Come on, man. What the fuck?
Well, yeah. And, you know, look, Bill Barr, for somebody who's as obnoxious as he is tremendously good at working the press. And honestly, journalists should be humiliated that they let themselves be walked all over for this because one, you know, one of the easy things to point, like, you don't have to get into how Bill Barr, you know, shut down 10 different criminal investigations into Trump and other people. Nope. You can just point to, like, Bill Barr made this big thing after December 1st of 2020. He's like, oh my God, this fake news, this big lie stuff is terrible. This, you know, election fraud stuff is terrible. And it's like, no, like, that's a ploy.
Right.
Because Bill Barr was one of the first people to start spreading the big lie, and he did it with mail-in voting. He did it to discredit mail-in voting. And so you don't give him a pass on the fact that he decided to get off that gravy train when it became legally dangerous. He was part of discrediting normal elections ahead of time. And so it's just not plausible to say, oh, he had this big break with Trump. I think that this whole effort, particularly his book, because his book is, you know, all autobiographies are dishonest. And, as somebody with a PhD in fiction, I find them very interesting because they're all just as fictional as any novel is. They're just more interestingly fictional because, you know, the intent and the craft is usually more raw. And so, like, Bill Barr's book was largely an effort to rewrite a lot of the garbage he did with Rudy Giuliani, and it was meant to exonerate himself. And it's, you know, it's garbage, but most people treat it as, you know, God's honest truth. And then the other thing is that I wrote out in this post is, like, now we know that Bill Barr, his effort, his side channel to help Rudy Giuliani share dirt from known Russian spies and funnel some of it to the investigation of Joe Biden's son. Mm-hmm. We know that that ended up framing Joe Biden. We know with the Alexander Smirnoff indictment, that had the effect of framing Joe Biden for bribery. Did Bill Barr know that it was going to end up framing Joe Biden? Did Bill Barr know when he, after Donald Trump yelled at him in October 2020, did he know that there was no substance to that allegation when he ordered David Weiss to pursue it days after Donald Trump yelled at him for not investigating Hunter Biden enough? Did he know that it had been debunked when he came out publicly in June of last year to say, oh, David Weiss is the one who was supposed to investigate this? And I think there needs to be some accounting for that. And there need to, you know, people need to at least be asking the question. People need to be saying whether he intended to or not. Bill Barr set up a system to protect Rudy Giuliani while he was going to demand and solicit dirt from known Russian spies that had the effect of framing Joe Biden. There's no exaggeration in that statement. And that's how we need to be talking about Bill Barr as he, you know, does his little media stupid tour.
Right. Most definitely. There is breaking news. In case you're not aware, we record these Friday sessions in the morning Arizona time because it's late afternoon in Ireland where Marcy Wheeler is. So we do it usually at 10 Pacific time, at least this time of the year. So at this point, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Breaking news, they have seated the entire panel in the Trump trial. So they have 12 jurors. They have 6 alternates. I guess Monday, unless something happens over the weekend, and I wouldn't discount that possibility, they will probably begin the trial on Monday, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, opening arguments.
Oh, boy. Yes, good luck to all of us. So MSNBC has up on the screen right now. I don't have it handy here. The 5 women, 7 men. This is the panel. What they have are just outlines of either a male or a female silhouette. salesman, investment banker, attorney, security engineer, teacher, software engineer, attorney, former wealth manager, speech therapist, works in commerce, product development manager, and physical therapist. Those are your 12 jurors.
Two attorneys. People are pretty intrigued by that. Yeah. Really, probably a smarter than average jury. And that may not be something Trump really wanted, but we'll see.
We'll see. All right, Marcy. Well, there's so much we didn't get to. Obviously, we can't talk about everything, just like you can't write about everything. Yes, Israel. Before I went to bed last night, I thought, oh, great, here we go. World War III, because Israel fired rockets at Iran. Inconceivably, like, what the fuck are they doing? This morning, last night, it was hair on fire everywhere. This morning, it was like, oh, it was limited. They just hit a military base. It's business as usual in Iran this morning. So it's over. Let's hope. Because that's the insanity. There's more Hunter Biden. So there's always shit. There's so much stuff.
There's the vote. Yeah. So also, hopefully tomorrow, finally, the Ukraine funding will go through. Because yes. If that doesn't happen, then Ukraine, Russia is sort of picking off private citizens in Ukraine fairly easily at this point. So that needs to happen.
And now a third Republican in the House is joined with Marge and who's the other one? Massey, to say, yeah, we're going to oust Mike Johnson. Well, you know what? You finally have a guy, a Republican speaker, who's at least saying, you know what? We got to get something done, because all we do is fight and do stupid things. Not to say he doesn't do stupid things, but he's trying to get this funding passed. So for his efforts, they want to vacate the chair.
Yeah. And, honestly, it has always been the case that if these terrorists, one of the interesting things about this debate is people like Marge are making, Marge said something about the Hungarians in Ukraine and Carpath, Marge said something she has no competence to say.
Well, she does that a lot.
Somebody who's mainlining Russian disinformation directly to her got her to say something that, could come right out of Putin's mouth.
Yes.
These people are hiding less and less that they're doing Russia's bidding. And you've got people, I'm forgetting who it was, really calling out fellow Republicans now for doing the bidding of Russia. So that's one thing that's going on, is you finally have even some very right-wing Republicans saying, like, look, we have to stop doing the bidding of Russia, which is, I think, interesting. The other thing is, it has always been the case, as Republicans try to take out Republicans, that at some point you're going to hit a tipping point where it puts Democrats in the sweet seat rather than Republicans, especially because Democrats have more unity, and Hakeem Jeffries has been groomed to do this job for years, yes, whereas Mike Johnson sort of fell into it and can't count and doesn't have big fundraising. And I think that, it will be an uncertain time, but it could be a more interesting time. All of this terrorism from the far right may end up finally really hurting Republicans. Matty Gaetz, by the way, other news from today is ABC keeps having details about the ethics inquiry about him. And there was a detail about a statement of a woman who was underage, who was at a party, lots of drugs. The 17-year-old that Matt Gaetz allegedly slept with was nude at the party. So that's all bubbling in the background, that Matt Gaetz we're closer to hearing the story about Matt Gaetz having underage sex, allegedly having underage sex, that, is the reason, purportedly why he first took out Kevin McCarthy.
Right.
The other thing that's interesting about this is, Democrats are getting more honest about the difference between the relationship with Mike Johnson and Kevin McCarthy. They're like, they're both jerks.
Yes.
But Kevin McCarthy lied to us. And Kevin McCarthy, I think many, many Democrats feel that Kevin McCarthy, both Kevin McCarthy and Mike Johnson played key roles in January 6th. Kevin McCarthy was targeted. Mike Johnson was sort of the intellectual brainchild of the lawsuits.
Right.
But Kevin McCarthy at first said this is insurrection, and then very quickly flipped.
Yes.
And very quickly, you know, and that was, you know, really a fundamental moment in the history of the United States to have Kevin McCarthy decide that he doesn't care about it being an insurrection anymore. And then one after another Republican doing the same thing. I think that, you know, Mike Johnson's a terrible person, but I think Democrats may have an easier time working
with him,
working with and working Mike Johnson.
Yep.
And so as these numbers get thinner in among Republicans, we'll see. They we'll live see. In interesting times. It's going to be as crazy the next week as it was this week.
No kidding. Tomorrow's holiday is falling just at the perfect time. I wonder if they celebrate over in Ireland. It's 420 day.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably not a thing there. It is a thing here. And the timing is perfect so we can stock up, get the weed, get the popcorn, and get ready for next week. Marcy Wheeler, we will reconvene next Friday with a lot more to talk about. As always, thank you so much. Have a great weekend, everyone. Peace out.